Welcome, my friends, to episode 49 of Little Cabin Knits. Today's topic is compassion and, of course, knitting. Now, Little Cabin Knits is a bi-weekly podcast all about knitting, mental health, advocacy, and life happenings here in the wilds of Alaska with a little bit of Higa sprinkled throughout. I'm your host, Emily. I'm a knitter, crafter, mental health therapist, and explorer of my home state of Alaska. This week's episode contains administration, raise a cuppa, on the shelf, on the couch, personal skill set, and contemplation corner. So grab a cuppa of your choice, let's sit back and enjoy the show. Administration. Well, welcome, my friends. I've already said that. My name is Emily, and I am also known as Anders Mill Knits on Instagram and Ravelry. I also have a YouTube channel, which is called Between Knits and Purls, and I co-host that with my knitting bestie, Stephanie, who is known as Farmstead Knits on all the interwebs. And anything that we talk about here that is chat-worthy, which there is something that is chat-worthy, will be posted, or you can start a chat thread on the Between Knits and Purls Ravelry group. Feel free, guys, to start a chat thread, because heaven knows Emily ain't good at that. I want to be, just not the greatest at it. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at littlecabinknitsak@gmail.com or private message me on Instagram or Ravelry. You can also find all the show notes on the blog, which is andersmillknits.wixsit.com/website. So I do have actually a question for you that I've been contemplating, and I literally do not know what to do about this. Pardon me. I've been thinking about either A, starting a Patreon page to help support the audio podcast and the YouTube channel. Just so you guys know, making the audio podcast takes me about 10 hours during the week that I do it. Doing the YouTube channel takes a little bit longer because actually editing video can be a lot more strenuous and a lot more time consuming. That I love using the Anchor app that I use for my audio podcast because they make editing really easy. And I love doing this. I also would love to be able to have ways to create more content for you that would be more apropos for you. So if you have topics that you want in particular for me to touch on, especially in mental health, totally willing to do that. You just don't be shy. Just message me. But what I would do with the Patreon is have obviously tiers and have, you know, what's it called? You know, rewards for each tier, and that would help offset the amount of time and energy that I put into each of these platforms. Another option I thought of doing, because there are a lot of Patreons out there, and you know, it can be a little time consuming for people, or a little hard on the wallet. I don't know which is the word. But another option is that I could create a swag page where I create some t-shirts that you can order off of the swag page. I've also thought about making little buttons and sending them out to people. They're not enamel pins. I don't know if you guys have looked at how much enamel pins cost to have made, but they are well out of this girl's price range. But making some buttons here at home, I have a lot of really great ideas. And I'd be really excited to do it. I just don't want to do it unless there's an interest in it. And they're really cute, my ideas. I just don't know, right? So if you guys wouldn't mind messaging me and letting me know what style you would prefer, either the Patreon package where we offer you some extra goodies, such as private events and chats and I'm even thinking about asking some people to do some classes for us on Patreon. And so that month, whatever we would make on Patreon would go to that person who would do the class, but that would be a private event for the top tier people. If that's what you would like, please feel free to let me know. If you think that's a bad idea and is too hard on the wallet, then, and you think the swag idea, especially around the holidays, it might be a little bit better, let me know on that one too. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, okay? Well, speaking of special events, we have one coming up. The Knitty Pajama Party with Steph and I will be happening on November 13th at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. So for me, here in Alaska, it would be at 4:30 p.m. But, and then, let's see, Mountain Standard Time, it would be something like 6:30, I'm thinking. And then, who knows for the people across the globe. Yep. So I have created a spot saver on YouTube, on our YouTube channel for that. So you can go in there and you can say to, you can tell it to remind you when that is coming up to be there. Also though, this is something a little different that we wanted to try. If you would like to actually be literally on the show, you know, have your face on the screen, if you go to our Ravelry group, again, that's Between Knits and Purls, and you look for the chat thread pajama party or Knitty Pajama Party, you will actually find the invitation link to join us live on video for that event. Fair warning, though, whoever joins us live on video, your face will be seen by everybody on YouTube who wants to see it. And that can be really a jittery feeling, right? But we're awesome people. People talk a lot about trolls. I've been hearing a lot of people talk about trolls lately. You know, those people who leave mean comments and stuff. I think I've maybe had one lukewarm mean comment to me once in all the years I've been doing this. So I just want you to know everybody is extremely welcoming. We want to see your faces. We want to put a face to the name, although I know most of you via Instagram too. So please join us if you can. We would love to have you. Also, this is a little tiny mini podcast spotlight because I wanted to talk about November, which is actually Wovember for all of us wool lovers. So the concept is that during the month of November, we celebrate everything we love about the wool. And the podcast, I Thought I Knew How, you guys have heard me talk about Annie and how much I like her, or just Anne, sorry. So the podcast is called I Thought I Knew How. She's hosting an event on her website, but it's also a contest for those of us who participate in posting on Instagram daily using the hashtag Wovember and hashtag I love Wovember. So the gist of it is that Anne is partnering with a whole bunch of great woolists from around the world for this contest. So you can enter, you can be entered to win not only if you use the hashtag and follow the daily prompts for Wovember, but also you have to follow all of those wonderful creators. So in essence, what I'm saying is go to her Instagram account. She's got a whole beautiful post about this. Again, her Instagram account is I Thought I Knew How. She has all the details. Now, for me, I won't really be entering in the actual contest. However, I thought it'd be a wonderful way to ease into winter here in Alaska if I followed as many as the daily prompts as possible on my Instagram account. I've known about Wovember for many years, and, you know, it's one of those things that I'm like, can I really commit to posting every single day that thoughtfully? I don't know, but I think I'd like to give it a try. So if that's something you would like to do, but you wouldn't want to enter into the contest, I'm posting the prompts for the Wovember daily prompt tags or whatever they're called on my on my Instagram account, but also on the blog again, which is andersmillknits.wixsit.com/website. So you can find all of those things there. I really hope that you take the time to not only join in posting about our love of wool this November, but also take a look at the I Thought I Knew How website, because she has got some really exciting, thoughtful, in-depth, and purposeful articles and people that she's interviewed and has brought in to help her really make this something special for the month of Wovember. Okay, my friends, it's official. Remember last podcast when I said, I think it would be really interesting if we did something in the new year to help us bring down those projects that we have on the needles? Well, I got a great response from you guys. So much so that it's official. So coming January 1st, we're going to do the Project Down Along. And you can use the hashtag Project Down Along 2022 on Instagram. And I've also opened, I haven't opened yet. I will be opening an FO thread in our Ravelry group of Between Knits and Purls. Now, this is what I'm calling a pal. I don't know what the word. So it's a project along is pretty much what I'm saying. And so you don't have to just be doing knitting or crocheting or weaving. Whatever crafty project you have, quote unquote, on the go counts during this Project Down Along. So I might even be breaking out some of my really old diamond painting projects to try and get that down. Because I thought those are just going to look so pretty when they're done. But, you know, I just kind of gave up about 5 years ago. Like, maybe I just need to bring those out again. And then I've got who knows how many cross-stitch projects on the go. And I've got plans for many more. So it would be really great to have the encouragement of our community to get that done. And I got such a great response from you guys, so much so that one of our dear friends here on the podcast, her name is Knitter Cat on Ravelry. She's very generously started off the prize pool by gifting us 2 skeins from her stash. Kat, I mean, I can't tell you how much your generosity means to me and all the participants of our PAL. It's just, she was so awesome. She just let me go into her for sale or trade listings, and she's just like, just pick out 2 skeins and we'll put it in the prize pool. I was like, you're just amazing. So Kat, you're awesome. And when the time comes in March, when we call for prizes, whoever wins the skeins from Kat, she will ship those directly to you. So thank you guys. Thank you, Kat, so much. And I want all of you guys, if you can, maybe message Knitter Cat and also thank her for her generosity as well. And if you know any maker or generous donor like Kat who would like to contribute to the prize pool, let me know. I'd love to have them. Raise a cuppa. Well, my nitty friends, Mr. Radio and I are finally back in our house. Does that immediately follow, then, that everything is hunky-dory as far as the house structure? Not my marriage. My marriage is awesome. No, not by a long shot. Things are not great here. To begin with, we spent the entire weekend, last weekend, cleaning out the house because everything had at least a quarter inch of either dust or literal mud caked into it or onto it. My front door, all my kitchen cabinets, the refrigerator, all my dishes which I had piled up in the living room, they were all filthy. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I'm not even talking about what I had to do in the bathroom. So I ran into a snag, though, when I tried to run my dishwasher. It just made a very strange and creepy sound, and Mr. Radio called the workers and they said, "Something went wrong and we aren't allowed to fix it. We have to have the municipality come out to fix it because we're not allowed to touch it." No one knows what in the world they were talking about. What do you mean the municipality has to fix it and you can't touch it? It didn't make sense. I knew it was a bald-faced lie from the beginning, but I didn't have anything to go on. But then again, I know because just yesterday, one of their construction crew was traipsing in and out of my house all day, fixing not only that, but all the other plumbing that has not been right. For instance, after my shower yesterday morning, the tub backed up again and flooded not only the bathroom, but the hallway. Oh, actually, no, the tub didn't flood the hallway. It was me running the washing machine. Yeah. So when I attempted to run the washing machine, water started leaking out into the hallway, and I just heard this strange gurgling sound from our pipes, and it went on throughout even the night. Like, it kept on waking me up during the night, and nobody obviously was running water. It was, So we've been essentially without water, except they graciously allowed us to use our toilet throughout the day as they worked on things for, like, the past 24 hours. So, I don't know. Have I mentioned how unhappy I am with all of this? The workers never communicate with us unless we track them down and corner them. And they repeatedly claim things are not their fault or that we're actually going to be done by tomorrow. And I've become like a roaring lion because I need to do that to get them to fix things. You might have seen even on my Instagram account where I posted when I am like, do not disturb me because I am actually teaching a class. I had to post those because they just would traipse in and out at all hours of the day, didn't even knock. My dog would start barking, and it was just a rip-roaring mess when I was trying to teach. I would have to stop and go and get my dog and everything. So, did that. Now, today... Oh, hold on. Before I talk about today. So, there was supposed to be a silver lining in all of this, though. So, we were told by the lead man that because of all the heartache and headache they've caused us, they would gladly install our new countertops if we bought them. So Mr. Radio and I were so excited. So last weekend we went out and we bought our dream countertops, butcher block, in a beautiful chevron pattern, and boy were they expensive. So we brought them back to the house, but then the next day the foreman called us. Now this is a different guy. And said that his man lied to us and that if we wanted them to install the countertops, they would have to charge us an additional $600. I was furious. However, I was actually teaching a class when they called and Mr. Radio dealt with them, so I was unable to vent my anger on the foreman. But I have been giving him dirty looks through my window all day, ever since we've been home. Now, today... they poured the concrete into the foundation. And again, the foreman came out and told us that meant that by pouring the concrete, they should not have any reason to come back into our house starting next week. And I was like, awesome. 2 minutes later, the foreman came out and he said, I've got some bad news. Jeremy, Mr. Radio, and I just looked at each other. We're like, oh boy. He said, we've discovered that one of your foundation walls is bowed out and is actually not connected to your house. So next week, we're actually going to have to lift your house yet again and push the wall out and reattach it to your building. And I'm thinking to myself, how are you just noticing this now? And why is it being noticed after you've put in all of these pillars, you've been working on the foundation for 2.5 months now, and you are currently pouring the concrete in? Like, how are you noticing this now? It doesn't make any sense, but I can't do anything about it. So I just have to live with it. So 2 days next week, I'm going to be out of my house yet again because we can't be in the house when they lift it. Okay. On a happier note, we've really enjoyed our time up at our in-laws' house. You know, we've had all that space to spread out in. Me, I had a home office that I didn't have to share with Mr. Radio, and Watson loved exploring the backyard every day and not having to be on a leash every time he went outside. In fact, it was actually really hard to get him to come back inside a lot of times. But I later learned that he was actually really sick and he was wandering around. I don't want to get into that story of how sick Watson was and everything. It's a whole nother heartache. But even though he was sick, he was actually still really enjoying his time out in the yard. And he's actually been having a really hard time adjusting being back in our home. So he's had a few accidents throughout the home because of the stress and the fear of all these strange men and women traipsing in and out of the house without permission, in his opinion, and honestly, in some respects, my opinion. But, you know, it's okay. We're getting there. And we did have a great, exciting time one day when Mr. Radio got home from work and Watson and I had gone out to greet him, and we discovered bear tracks all over the yard. And the bear tracks were pretty big. So it was pretty exciting. I put that up on my Instagram stories, I think it's called. You know, honestly, I would have preferred to stay up at the in-laws until the work was positively and completely done. However, if we had done that, I wouldn't have discovered all the plumbing problems until after they had sealed everything back up and put it all back together. And honestly, where would we be then if that had been the case? So while this is really stressful and annoying, and I want to bash some heads together, like really seriously bad guys, and I am not a violent person, I am grateful that we're back in our house, because I found out all these things and I'm making sure that they're getting fixed and I'm not taking any guff from anybody. So, you know, there is that silver lining. So maybe that should be a lesson to you. Don't cross Emily. I won't take revenge, but I will make you pay the righteous cost, you know? Okay, that's enough ranting for today, I think. On the shelf. I have quite a few items on the shelf. In fact, I just finished something last night and I forgot to include them in my show notes, so I'm going to have to do that. Well, the first thing I have completed is my Spring Thing shawl. And again, if you joined us for the live birthday celebration on YouTube, you will know that Stephanie, or Farmstead Knits, and I cast this shawl on in honor of her birthday and our friendship. And the yarn is by a very good friend, Lauren of Granite State Yarns. And by the way, guys, have you seen her Christmas colorways? Oh my gosh, I want, and I don't even like the color red, but I want. But the colorway that Lauren created for the Between Knits and Pearls podcast is called Treasured Friends. And she included a mini skein called Raspberry for the edging and the fringe, as well as what we used it for in the Spring Thing shawl. And this colorway is very special, so I loved it. The pattern is, like I said, the Spring Thing. I think it's just called Spring Thing, and I keep adding the word shawl. And it's a free pattern on Ravelry from the very talented team at Espace Tricot. And like I mentioned before, I couldn't find any of their actual patterns on their website, but all of their patterns are free on Ravelry. And let me see here. Now, this this pattern is really easy and it's very gratifying, and I've said it many times. I memorized it within 8 rows. And okay, I'm going to be honest. To be fair, I'm not completely done with the shawl because there's all this fringe that I want to add that the original pattern has on it. It's a lot of, oh yes, you call them tassels. However, I got very excited about my next finished object, and so I honestly completely forgot about all that, the extra tassels / fringe until I was pulling everything out and writing up my show notes and stuff. So I'm going to get on that, you know, because I want to have it completely done. But I'm counting it as done because I blocked it and everything. My next completed project is the socks for Mr. Radio from our honeymoon. Now, the yarn is Two Sisters Yarn Company, purchased at the Yarn Bar in Billings, Montana on our honeymoon road trip. The colorway is called Yarn Bar, and it's dyed up in self-striping fashion after their logo. So they've got an olive green, a white, a blue, and black, I believe, is in there. So it's really beautiful. And I used the Fish Lips Kiss Heel for his socks. And yeah, it's just been great. These things knit up like butter. Like really fast. I know I've knit socks this fast. It just feels like these socks flew off the needles. And, you know, I wonder if that's because of the nature of the dye pattern within the socks themselves, because these are stripes of differing sizes and widths, and it keeps you very interested, where oftentimes when the self-striping is literally, oh, I've got 8 rows of gray, 8 rows of pink, 8 rows of purple, oh, and then it goes back to 8 rows of gray again. So exciting, woohoo. That should be exciting, right? Because it's like a mastermind figured out. I've never been able to figure out how to dye up self-striping yarn. I don't know how they do it. It's a mystery to me. But sometimes it's a little boring when I'm knitting it. I'll just say it. I know, gasp, you know, slap me across the face for saying it, but it's true. However, these, I think it's because the way that the striping went was really exciting to me. So they just flew off the needles. And Mr. Radio's been enjoying them too. We've had a little bit of chilly weather the last week, and so he's been wearing them every night. He never wears his socks out of the house, even though I tell him, wear them wherever you want, honey. I'm gonna keep knitting you socks anyway. But he prefers to wear them only at home. So he's been wearing them at home in the evening. My second to last finished object is the Tweed Boomerang by Lauren Parker. And this yarn is the Mountain Colors in her tweed base. The main color is Bridger Teal, and the variegated that came with the kit didn't have a colorway name attached to it, but it appears to be of the same DK tweed base as the main colorway, and it's really, really happy colors. It made me think very much of a carnival. I bought this kit while I was at the Yarn Bar in Billings. Let's just say that I had a great time there. The pattern is $5 on Ravelry, and while it's a simplistic boomerang shawl pattern at the beginning, no, even at the end when we do the lace, but the effect is awesome, and I have loved wearing it around my neck. It's so soft and squishy. The tweed doesn't bother me at all, like the little fluffy things that sometimes come loose in tweed yarn. And it just fits around my neck so nicely. I love it. So I am extremely happy with this knit. Very happy indeed. My last finished object is something that I mentioned that I was going to cast on last podcast, but I hadn't yet. That is the Chevron Baby Blanket, also by Espace Tricot. It is also a free pattern on Ravelry, and it is wonderful. I loved this pattern. I had no trouble following it after the first stripe repeat of it, and it was so satisfying to knit. I still have all the ends to weave in, and I still need to block it, but as of last night, we started rewatching all of the Great British Baking Competition, and I am now on season 3, and I've been watching it only while I've been knitting on this baby blanket for a friend, and it's done now. Now, what yarn did I use? Okay, so all of the yarn is from the Brown Sheep Company. It's very affordable yarn. I really like it. And I think I would put the quality of this yarn just above Michael's or Joanne Fabrics quality of yarn, if you know what I mean. So here are the colorways that I used. I used Serendipity Tweed in the ST12 or Water Lily Leaves colorway, which was green. The Cotton Fleece Base in the CW690 or Alpine Lilac colorway, which lilac was a perfect name for it because it was lilac colored. The next color I used was Cotton Fleece in the CW Silver Berry colorway, which is a purple. And then I used Serendipity Tweed in the ST64 or the Cherry Blossom colorway, and it's pink. It's a nice vibrant pink. And lastly, I use Serendipity Tweed in the ST24 or Morning Glory colorway, which was blue. And so let's just go over that. I used green, lilac, purple, pink, and blue. And when I was laying out all the yarns, getting ready to cast this on, I thought to myself, this is going to look atrocious. Emily, what were you thinking? Well, I know what you were thinking. You were thinking you wanted to knit your friend a baby blanket, and all of this was on deep clearance, and so why not knit her a baby blanket from all of this? Well, it's going to look bad. These colors are not going to look great. Well, did I eat my words? Because, I mean, I don't know that it would necessarily be the colors I would choose for a baby blanket that I would knit for myself or my child or something, which I don't have a child, just so you know. But I know my friend's going to like it. I know my friend's going to like it. And they're doing kind of neutral. There's no, like, gender-specific colors they're doing for their baby. And so I think that this will go either way. I mean, I know what gender their baby is, but I think this blanket would easily go either way. And it's really pretty. And the chevron effect is gorgeous. I do feel, unblocked, that this blanket is a little narrow. It's definitely long enough. I love the length as for a baby blanket, or even for a shawl. It would be really cool as just a shawl as it is. So I'm wondering what will happen when I block it. Just how far will it block out widthwise, and will I feel confident in, well, I'm going to send it to her regardless, but in my head, will I feel confident that this is a good baby size blanket? Baby blanket size, you know? So, but I'm excited about that. I plan on weaving in the ends and blocking that tonight, probably. I mean, why put it off? I mean, it's Thursday night. All I have to do is I'm going to start knitting on some other languishing projects, although I do have some Christmas knitting I need to get onto. Not much, but just I want to knit my dad some gloves out of some black alpaca fingering weight that I'm going to hold double, but I need to find a pattern for that. If anybody knows of some of men's glove knitting pattern for that, I would love to hear about it. I haven't really looked, honestly. I've never knit gloves. I've knit plenty of mittens, but you know, my dad has pretty bad arthritis in his hands, and he doesn't really have much use for hand knits. Although recently I've been noticing he's been oogling or side-eyeing some of the things that I've been making for family and friends. So I'm like, ooh, maybe if I knit him gloves out of this beautiful black alpaca that's not in your face and not gaudy and it's just what he needs, you know, maybe he'll actually be won over by my hand knits. Finally, after more than 20 years, we shall see. But that, my friends, is on the shelf. And I have nothing on the couch, so I kind of lied, because since I finished the chevron baby blanket, I have nothing on the couch now. I got to figure out what I'm either A, going to cast on, or B, pick up and start knitting on again. Is it my sweater? Is it my Alaska skirt? Is it the gloves? I have so many things I can work on. I'm not at a lack of knitting opportunities, that is for sure. But it does feel really exciting to have all these projects off the needles all at once. Personal skill set. Compassion. It's a word that we may bandy about. However, do we really know what it means? Do we know what it means when we say, I have compassion for those poor people? Or when Mrs. Bennet says in Pride and Prejudice, have a little compassion on my nerves, you tear them to pieces. Okay, I'm a terrible, terrible, you know, not linguist, but, you know, I can't do voices, let's just put it that way. But people define compassion in different ways. So some people believe that showing caring, kindness, or willingness to help others, that's compassion. And others believe that caring about another person's happiness like it was your own, now that's the definition of compassion, according to some. Webster's Dictionary defines it as a sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering or misfortune of others. others I've seen define compassion as suffering together. You know, emotion researchers, they define that feeling, it's what arises when you are confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. So emotion researchers are actually defining it as an action word. Well, maybe. They're just saying that you feel motivated to relieve that suffering, not that you are motivated and do it. So I guess maybe feel that way. Anyway, compassion is actually two words in Latin. So the part of the word that's passion, P-A-S-S-I-O-N, means to suffer. And the C-O-M part of the word means with. So the literal translation of the word compassion means to suffer with. I want you to think for a moment about your friends. When they've come to you with troubled minds and hearts, I bet you sit down with them, listen to their troubles and fears, and you try to alleviate some of their suffering. In this way, you're showing compassion to your friend. You may even be suffering with them in the moment because it's hurting you to see how hurt they are, right? Now, let's take a step back for a minute and let's differentiate compassion from some other words that seem kind of closely linked to it. So compassion is not the same as empathy or altruism, though the concepts are related, okay? So empathy refers more generally to our ability to take the perspective of and to feel the emotions of another person. However, compassion is when those feelings and thoughts include the desire to help the other person. Okay? So and then altruism is the kind and selfless behavior often prompted by feelings that emote through compassion. So you can feel compassion without acting on it, and altruism isn't always motivated by compassion. So what do I mean? The altruism is the kind, selfless behavior, right? Well, it's often motivated by compassion, but it doesn't have to be motivated by compassion. It can also be motivated by other feelings as well. But the key thing about altruism is that it's selfless. It's not seeking its own reward. So the Buddhist Roshi Joan Halifax, she is amazing. I'm not a Buddhist, but I do love a lot of their teachings. Well, she described compassion in a TED Talk she gave called Compassion and the True Meaning of Empathy. This is what she said. We can ask, what is compassion comprised of? And there are various facets. And there's referential and non-referential compassion. But first, compassion is comprised of that capacity to see clearly into the nature of suffering. It is the ability to really stand strong and to recognize also that you're not separated from that suffering. You're not separate from that suffering. But that's not enough, because compassion, which activates the motor cortex, that means we actually aspire to transform suffering. And if we're so blessed, we engage in activities that transform the suffering. But compassion has another component, and that component is really essential. That component is, we cannot be attached to the outcome. So what Roshi Halifax is stating here is that, in essence, when we feel compassion, we are moved to transform or to relieve that suffering. But she also makes it clear that the compassionate one must separate themselves from the outcome of that act of relief. Or we will be the one in need of compassion sometimes. So why is that? Well, if you're attached to the need to relieve your friend's suffering, however nothing you do or say makes a dent in that suffering, you will soon feel inadequate or that something is wrong with you and that you couldn't solve this problem or heal their emotional wound. So you might then become in need of compassion from another. But when you detach yourself from the outcome by saying, I will give my all, but it's out of my control what the outcome is, you are in a healthy state of compassion. So at times, it's kind of easier to define something by explaining what something is not. And so I think of that a lot with the word compassion. So for a moment, I'm going to describe the things that compassion is not, and then I'll get into things that what compassion is, okay? So compassion is not empathy, nor is it sympathy, but it does require both of those emotions to have compassion arise. So empathy involves responding to another person's emotions with emotions that are similar. Sympathy entails feeling regret for another person's suffering. Compassion, on the other hand, is caring about another person's happiness as if it were your own. The challenge with this definition, however, is that how easily it causes us to mistakenly infer that compassion therefore means things like you give people what they want. And that is a mistake. Not only because you confuse this thought with the avoidance of disappointing another, but also when you give people what they want, you got to ask yourself, does this really make them happy? Or does it leave them only fleetingly happy, but also leaves them unimproved, denying them of the motivation to take on growth and produce change? Also, what people often want isn't honestly really good for them. Like a child who wants to watch television instead of doing homework, or the gambler who wants to bet his life savings, or the diabetic that wants that Snickers bar like I wanted earlier today, right? If our aim is to help others become happy, we must apply our own judgment to the actions we're asked to take on their behalf. So, therefore, compassion without wisdom is very dangerous. So what compassion is not giving people what they want. Also, compassion is not sacrificing ourselves. So the size of our compassion is often measured by what we're willing to sacrifice. We shouldn't therefore conclude that an act requiring sacrifice is therefore there to qualify as a compassionate one, that act. Acting compassionately may often be very inconvenient, but if you find yourself actually sacrificing your own happiness in some significant way, you've allowed yourself to be deceived into thinking one person's happiness is more important than another's, i.e. your own. A wise person's own happiness matters just as much to him or her as the happiness of others. No more, no less. So compassion is not sacrificing ourselves. Compassion is also not being constantly gentle. So many people believe that when you're being compassionate, it requires you to be almost passive, right, in your nature and being very nonviolent in your demeanor and express only loving kindness at all times. All right, well, though compassion certainly can be all of those things, to be effective, compassion must sometimes also be harsh, angry, and forceful. Now, when you are those things, when you're compassionately forceful, you're doing this with the intent to increase another person's happiness as your desired outcome. It's not for some intrinsic need inside yourself to get a point across, or to be more powerful than them, or to control them. It is in the end because you are seeking their happiness. Okay, so take Mother Teresa, for example. I've heard a lot of reports that she was often very hard and demanding, but did that lessen her compassion? And did that lessen her compassionate legacy? I don't think so. In fact, in my humble opinion, I do believe her fierce compassion drove her to alleviate the suffering of others and has inspired countless people to do the same. So again, compassion is not being constantly gentle. Compassion is also not seeking a reward. When you have true compassion, you expect no rewards or recognition for whatever act you did. Not that there's anything wrong with either, like seeking a reward or recognition, but when they become the predominant motivation for acting compassionately, you risk either shifting your focus from increasing the happiness of others to the gratification of your own ego, right? And then you could risk making behaviors or having behaviors that harm people instead of helping them. So again, being compassionate means not seeking a reward. Lastly, being compassionate is not being liked by everyone. There's no requirement that you have to like everyone in order to be a compassionate person, and there's no requirement that everybody else has to like you. You can, in fact, actively dislike someone towards whom you feel great compassion. Being compassionate may mean thinking kindly about a person despite their flaws, but it doesn't mean pretending that those flaws don't exist. There's a boundary to be maintained here, my friends. We may not like the person that we're helping or condone their actions. And likewise, maintaining the boundary assists in resisting the urge to open yourself up to perhaps establishing a personal relationship with people that you try to help, but that you can't be attached to the outcome. Going back to what Roshi Halifax said, can't be attached to the outcome. So compassion is not liking everyone. Okay, so what is compassion like then? Well, I've got a list for that too. Compassion is unconditional acceptance, it's endurance, it's action, and it's courage. What do I mean by those things? Well, when I say that compassion is unconditional acceptance, I mean that compassion focuses itself only on the potential all people have for good, ignoring everything else. Okay, let me say that one more time. Compassion focuses itself only on the potential all people have for good, ignoring everything else. Which isn't to say that compassion deceives itself into thinking all people are good. No. Just that the capacity to become good can never be destroyed by 1,000 evil acts and must therefore always be sought. And this then requires endurance. Compassion requires endurance. So the people that you care for, or you may care for, they may refuse to stop suffering. I was once in that role. I didn't see that there was any way out, and I dwelt in my suffering for well over a year. And most of the people in my life gave up on me. But when you have true compassion, you endure through that. They may rail against you for your efforts and treat you even more poorly or harshly than others who don't even care about them at all, right? They may treat you like total dirt. But having true compassion for them is refusing to be defeated by those irreverent behaviors or irrational behaviors. That's the word I was looking for. Even if, like we discussed earlier, you must walk away. You do it with love. You never stop caring for them, even when they try to destroy themselves or others. Okay? Compassion is also action. It's an action word. Another person's happiness may feel more important to you, but if you have the opportunity to take compassionate action and yet you don't, your feeling of compassion was only theoretical, therefore. Okay? So unless you take action, it was only a theoretical thought. You didn't really truly have compassion. That's a hypothesis. Lastly, compassion takes courage. The action that arises from courage is invariably equivalent to action that arises from compassion. We also require courage to withstand the criticism that often results when you take compassionate action. All right, I know I've gone long, my friends, but I do want to take a moment to address self-compassion and talk about, in particular, I'm going to quote for a little while, Dr. Kristen Neff. She is a well-known researcher on the topic of self-compassion. She's one of my personal heroes. I love her. If you have the chance, look up her YouTube channels or her YouTube, well, any of her talks on YouTube and those kinds of things, but also her first book, Self-Compassion, and her very new book, Fierce Self-Compassion, which came out in response to the Me Too movement. It's only been out 2 months. You can get it on Audible. You can get it on in hardback. I have both because I like it so much. And I have read it also twice already since I've had it for a little less than a month. So just so you know, I love Kristen Neff. So Dr. Neff, she says that having compassion for yourself is really no different than having compassion for another person. Okay? So think about what the experience of compassion feels like. Feels like. First, to have compassion for another person, you must notice that they are suffering. So you notice. If you ignore that homeless person on the street, you can't feel compassion for how difficult his or her experience is, right? So, secondly, compassion involves feeling moved by another's suffering so that your heart responds to their pain. So, the word in compassion literally means to suffer with. Remember, we went back to the Latin there? When this occurs, when you feel moved, you feel warmth and caring and a desire to help the suffering person in some way, right? So, having compassion also means that you offer understanding and kindness to another person when they fail or they make a mistake, rather than judging them harshly. And finally, when you feel compassion for another person rather than pity, it means that you realize that suffering, failure, and imperfection is a part of the shared human experience, right? So they're not alone. Everyone has felt that suffering of failure, that suffering of knowing that you're imperfect, that suffering of hurt. Everyone has felt that. So self-compassion involves acting the same way towards yourself when you are having a difficult time, when you fail or you notice something you don't like about yourself. Instead of just ignoring your pain with a stiff upper lip, Instead, you stop and tell yourself, this is really difficult right now. How can I comfort and care for myself in this moment? Right? Also, instead of mercilessly judging and criticizing yourself for your shortcomings, self-compassion means that you're kind and understanding when confronted with personal failings. Guys, who said we were ever going to be perfect, right? I could stop right now and go through my head about all of the mistakes I've made in my little talk with you guys here on this podcast. The little ums or uhs or the stammers, right? I could sit here and criticize myself about all those things. Or I could use self-compassion and allow myself to say, and love myself in a kind way and say, you know what, Emily? You're not perfect. You don't talk as eloquently as the Queen of England. You're not a natural born, well, no, you're not a classically trained actor. You don't know all the intonations that other people know. You just learned as you went along, and you're doing a dang good job. That right there would be an act of self-compassion, wouldn't it? Right? So you may want to change things that allow you to be more healthy and happy, but this is done because you care about yourself, not because you feel that you are worthless or unacceptable as you are, right? I had a friend recently tell me, you know, I'm really unhappy with my weight and I can't stand it, but no matter what I do, I can't lose the weight. And I asked her what she says to herself when she sees herself in the mirror. And she listed a whole bunch of horrific words that shocked me, because I had no idea my friend felt this way about herself. She told herself daily that she was a slob, fat, lazy, incompetent, stupid, that she couldn't do anything right. And she thought, in her mind, by saying these things to herself, that it would actually motivate her to eat healthier, to get on that bike and go to the gym, right? She thought all those things would help. But she said, while I did do those things, I did it very angrily. And also, I never saw the results. So I paused with my friend and I said, you know, I wonder what would happen if in the morning, when you looked at yourself in the mirror, you told yourself how much you appreciate yourself, what you love about yourself, right? It doesn't have to be something physical. It could be that you love the way your eyes sparkle, or you love the way that you are kind to others. And then you can have a talk with yourself, saying, there are some things that I need to improve on. Why? Because I want to be here until I'm old and gray. I want to see my great-grandchildren around. Not because I want other people to look at me and say, ooh la la, ain't she pretty? Right? But because I want to be here to enjoy the goodness of life. I asked my friend to do this and to report back to me. And she did. She told me that in the last week, people have continuously told her that she looks happier, that she's got this kind of, she didn't use the word sparkle, but this air about her that seemed lighter. And I asked her, okay, well, did you exercise as much? She says, no, I didn't actually exercise as much. And I said, okay, well, did you eat healthier? I don't think I did, but also I didn't have any cravings for ice cream or candy. I was like, interesting. So how do you feel about that? And she said she didn't really know, but she just felt better overall. It was motivating her to be a better person, right? And that's what self-compassion can do for you. So I want to lastly end with Kristen Neff's three components of self-compassion. They are self-kindness versus self-judgment, common humanity versus isolation, and mindfulness versus identification. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to go ahead and quote Dr. Kristen Neff. Now, this won't be on my website because these are not my words and I did not ask permission to quote her. So just if you want to read about these things, get her books. You also, how about this? I'll link a few videos on YouTube that I particularly like. One will be pretty short and another one is, I think, about an hour and a half long that she talks about these things. Personally, I like the hour and a half long one better because she goes into more detail and explains it better. But if you're short for time, the 6-minute one is good to go. All right, so this is what she says about self-kindness versus self-judgment. Self-compassion entails being warm and understanding towards ourselves when we suffer, fail, or feel inadequate, rather than ignoring our pain or flagellating ourselves with self-criticism. Self-compassionate people recognize that being imperfect, failing, and experiencing life difficulties is inevitable. So they tend to be gentle with themselves when confronted with painful experiences rather than getting angry when life falls short of set ideas or ideals. People cannot always be or get exactly what they want. When this reality is denied or fought against, suffering increases in the form of stress, frustration, and self-criticism. When this reality is accepted with sympathy and kindness, greater emotional equanimity is experienced. Okay, so common humanity versus isolation. So frustration is not having things exactly as we want, and it's often accompanied by an irrational but pervasive sense of isolation, as if I were the only person suffering or making mistakes. And that's not the case. All humans suffer. The very definition of being human means that one is mortal, vulnerable, and imperfect. Therefore, self-compassion involves recognizing that suffering and personal inadequacy is a part of the shared human experience, something that we all go through, rather than being something that happens just to me alone. Lastly, mindfulness versus over-identification. So, self-compassion also requires taking a balanced approach to our negative emotions so that feelings are neither suppressed nor exaggerated. So, this equilibrated stance stems from the process of relating personal experiences to those of others who are also suffering. So in this way, we put our own situation into a larger perspective. Again, that common humanity piece, right? It also stems from the willingness to observe our negative thoughts and emotions with openness and clarity so that they are held in mindful awareness. No judgment, right? Mindfulness is a non-judgmental, receptive mind state in which one observes thoughts and feelings as they are without trying to suppress or deny them. We cannot ignore our pain and feel compassion for it at the same time. At the same time, mindfulness requires that we not be quote-unquote over-identified with the thoughts and feelings so that we are caught up and swept away by our negative reactivity. All right, so I've almost gone on for 30 minutes about what compassion and self-compassion is, so I'm going to end there. But just know that I've just gotten the tip of the iceberg here, guys. Literally just the tip. And I've probably, at this very end, gotten you a little bit frustrated with those three things that I talked about from Dr. Neff. You know, about how compassion and self-compassion is self-kindness versus self-judgment. Well, how do I be more kind to myself? And then the other one, common humanity versus isolation. Well, how do I always put it in perspective that, no, me stubbing my toe is a part of the greater human experience, right? Like, you know, Joe Schmo down the street didn't stub his toe today. I'm just making a stupid, silly comparison, right? How do we go about bringing ourselves to that point where we recognize that we are not alone in our suffering, right? And lastly, mindfulness versus over-identification. This, perchance, is the hardest one of all to do. Being able to be mindfully aware of our suffering, not seeking to immediately problem solve the suffering, but being aware of it, knowing where it resides in our body and in our mind, and not turning away from it, but also not drowning in it. How in the world do we do that? And I can't give you the answers, because there is a layered, very layered approach that takes many people years to work on. I'm one of those people. But I promise you that there is a way to achieve self-compassion. And so one thing that I'm going to do in the Hygge is give you an activity that you can do for that. Otherwise, I would highly recommend getting Dr. Kristen Neff's books. I would highly, one of my dreams is to participate in one of her workshops. It's an 8-week long workshop, I think it is, all about self-compassion. I want to do that so bad. So that's on it's on a dream list of mine. So with that, I know it's a little frustrating, but I'm going to leave you here with those thoughts. Time for Hygge. So following, my friends, is a mindfulness exercise called the self-compassion break. And this exercise comes from Dr. Kristen Neff. If you would like to see videos of this, there are a lot of videos on YouTube that will guide you actually through the self-compassion break as well. I'm going to verbally guide you through that now. So what I'd like you to do is lean back, put yourself in a comfortable position. Some of the ways to do that is to ground yourself by putting your arms on the sides of your, if you're in a chair, put them on the armrests. If they're not, gently place them in your lap. Place both feet so that they are firmly attached to the ground. And then just lean back and close your eyes. I'd like you to think of a situation in your life that is difficult, that causes you stress and grief. Call the situation to mind and see if you can actually feel that stress or emotional strain and discomfort in your body. Note where that feeling is located in your body. Is it in your mind, your forehead, behind your eyes, your throat, your chest, your belly? Do your arms ache or your legs feel restless? Note where you feel this in your body. Now, say to yourself, this is a moment of suffering. That, my friend, that statement is mindfulness. Other phrases you could use are, this hurts. Ouch. This is stress. Next, say the phrase, suffering is a part of life. That is common humanity. Other phrases include, other people feel this way. I am not alone. We all struggle in our lives. Now put your hands over your heart. Feel the warmth of your hands and the gentle touch of your hands on your chest. Or adopt a soothing touch that feels right for you. Say to yourself, may I be kind to myself. You can also ask yourself, what do I need to hear right now to express kindness to myself? Is there a phrase that speaks to you in your particular situation? It may be one of the following. May I give myself the compassion that I need? May I accept myself as I am? May I learn to accept myself as I am? May I forgive myself? May I be strong, or may I be patient. Whatever phrase that you latched onto, feel free to repeat that to yourself as your hands are slowly rubbing on your chest or whatever part of your body that feels right to you. As again, you repeat those phrases, one or two of those phrases to yourselves again and again, as you feel the suffering is eased from within. You can use this practice, my friend, any time, day or night, and it will help you to evoke those three aspects of self-compassion that we talked about earlier. Thank you for joining me in this exercise. Contemplation Corner. What is this self inside us, this silent observer, severe and speechless critic, who can terrorize us, and urge us onto futile activity, and in the end, judge us more severely for the errors into which his own reproaches drove us. T.S. Eliot, The Elder Statesman. When you begin to touch your heart, or let your heart be touched, you begin to discover that it's bottomless, that it doesn't have any resolution, that this heart is huge, vast, and limitless. You begin to discover how much warmth and gentleness is there, as well as how much space. Pema Chodron, Start Where You Are. Well, my friends, that brings us to the end of another episode of Little Cabin Knits. This was, again, episode 49, Compassion and Knits. I didn't talk today about compassionate knitting, about what that would look like for yourself, knitting compassionately for yourself or knitting compassionately for others, in which you seek no reward and no recognition for those kind acts. It's a big subject, and I'd already spent over 30 minutes on compassion in and of itself. So I invite you to continue that conversation. If you'd like to talk to me more about compassion and what that looks like, please give me a drop a line to me somewhere on the interwebs. Again, I'm AndersMillKnits on Instagram and Ravelry, or you can email me at littlecabinknitsak@gmail.com. Thank you so much for spending time with me. I really cherish our time, and I'm so excited that I'm getting to know a few of you at a time, and you are becoming dear friends. I'm so excited about that. So thank you so much. And if you're thinking about reaching out to me, I'm not an ogre. Reach out. I'd love to hear from you. And remember, my friends, to knit what you love and love what you knit. Ta-ta for now. Thank you.